All right, big hour. We've got Kurt Warner coming up. We caught up with Kurt earlier this morning. He's got a movie coming out based on his life, American Underdog.
Our favorite movie.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's coming out Christmas Day, and Kurt Warner's a great guy, and it's weird when you're dealing with like movie studios and setting up interviews, and there's always like a handler, and they've got like a million interviews to do.
Yeah,
and we were the first one
in this.
It was awesome. I can only imagine.
Okay, we're ready to go. Brian, Jeff, are you there? We're like, yep. And then all we hear is, no, we can't hear them. And then it was something new for me. I didn't know. Like, I think on their end, they thought we were on, like, some kind of Skype or, like, I don't know. It was just a different vibe, man.
10 minutes of technical difficulties and then a Zoom call that we weren't on and finishing with the PR person jumping in saying, all right, final question. And I'm like, well, we're live, but okay.
Dude, do you think this guy's head is going to pop off? This guy's head almost shot off of his body and through the top of his house and headed towards Mars.
I can imagine, because you know he's just sitting in front. They're going, okay, there's a show from Toronto. Here's a show from Columbus. And it just, like, he's rolling through.
Absolutely.
And you just, it's flat-out conveyor belt of interviews.
And it's not Kurt Warner's fault, and no. it's not anyone's fault, because the timeline got all screwed up, because we were supposed to do the interview at 10:35, and Owen and I were ready by like 10:20. We were all set up, and everything was good on our end, and then it was go time, and again, there were technical difficulties, and there was a mute button malfunction, and something just went awry, so we didn't start till about 10:43, so you know they had everything lined up. Like, to your point, it was 10:35 in Toronto, 10:45 in Columbus, 10:55 in L.A. Like, it was just boom, 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 boom. That's how it works. And because they were already late, it was tight. And we were under, like, we agreed. We said, we'll do a 10-minute interview. We're intrigued by the movie. We're big fans of Kurt Warner. I think our audience would like to hear the backstory of it all and how he got involved in this. And I think it was a really cool interview. And I'm looking forward to hearing it and playing it at 6:30. But we were under the threshold of 10 minutes, and the PR woman jumps on and goes, this would be your final question. Go ahead. Continue. I'm like, well.
So, like, you had a moderator, basically.
We had a moderator. Yeah. And we've edited that part out, so you won't be able to see it or hear it at 6:30, so it's all good. I guess I'm asking you not to be anticipating that, because that's not how we were planning and operating here.
I would have loved
really, really getting people's attention to stick around for this.
It's a beauty, though. It's a good interview. Kurt Warner's, he's Pro Football Hall of Famer, and you know, we were tight on time, but it was fun. It was a good interview.
The Grappler says he has the clip. Can we play the? Is there a chance? I need to hear this.
Like a teaser?
Just a teaser of the clip of her going last.
Here's
question.
The thing. Yes. Well, let's play. I'm nervous about my face, because I think I was given a stare at the camera like, what kind of amateur hour is going on here? Okay, let's play it. This is the
Here's a teaser. Here's a teaser. It's coming up. Kurt Warner interview and the interruption.
You know, and I was fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of great players.
Well, and obviously you made your impact in St. Louis.
Sorry to interrupt. If you guys could make this your last question. Your time is almost up. If you could make this your last question.
Okay, sure. So obviously you made your. Oh man, I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like,
I didn't know what your headspace was doing, but I was like, I'm okay with, like, just turning to everything off and aborting. Like, I should have done that.
I maybe should have. Like, what was I thinking? Picking up and being like, actually, I really got to get to this final question, which I did. I was intrigued by it based on the nature of the plot and the fact that the Rams are no longer in St. Louis and they're in L.A. And I wanted to get to that. And I knew we were under the threshold of the time allotment. And the way this works is it's a two-way street. Like, Kurt Warner's coming on, and we're fans of Kurt, and he's a big name. He's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. But make no mistake, they're coming on here to promote their movie. We're giving them a platform to promote on the radio and TV and all that kind of stuff. And it's not the first time that's happened to me. I was interviewing a wrestler. I think it was like Shawn Michaels or something. This would have been 7 or 8 years ago, and Steph and I are in the back booth. And the same kind of thing. Like 8 minutes in, someone pops on and goes, you're going to have to wrap this up. You've got about 30 seconds left. I'm like, okay, I guess we're moving on here.
Yeah.
And anyway, to be fair to Kurt Warner, he was cool about it. We're supporting the movie, and we can't wait to play the interview
for you. So funny.
I mean, 25 minutes.
That's, you know what? That's what makes it better, though. This is like, I can't wait to hear it. Obviously, you guys, as we talked about in the last hour, I've had some stuff going on here, so I wasn't able to make the pre-tape, but it was like...
Let's hear the clip again. Let's hear
it. I want to hear it one more time.
Teaser one more time.
You know, and I was fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of great players.
Well, and obviously you made your impact in St. Louis.
Sorry to interrupt. If you guys could make this your last question. Your time is almost up. If you could make this your last question.
Okay, sure.
okay.
That was very understanding.
That's got to be a new drop going forward if someone's a little irritated. Irritated. Sure. Okay, sure.
Okay, sure. With like a bit of a whisper. Like a whisper of disappointment. Sure. No problem. Okay, Kurt, let me continue with my question that apparently I have to ask. And then, to your point, it's like, what do I do? Do I abort? Do I just continue with it? Anyway, it's in the interview. Kurt Warner in 25 minutes. We can't wait for it. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. What's up, Dregs?
I'm just wondering, is this going to be a one and done? One question, then we're done, or how's this going to go?
Could
you guys need to wrap it up.
Do you have a PR person down there? It'd be great if you did.
Well, there are many. Well, actually, there aren't that many from the National Hockey League. We're in Florida, obviously, for the Board of Governors meetings, and I saw John Delapina and I saw Gary Maher, and I think that is it for the media contingent. They've really pared down here in limiting the number of people who can attend club by club, department by department from the NHL. But TSN Sportsnet didn't get the memo because I was on the same flight with about 11 other media types from both networks. So
I like it.
We should have it well covered, you know.
I like it. Well, yeah, I mean, the Board of Governor meetings, we missed out on those, I guess, a year ago. I guess they forgot that Zoom exists and they could probably still hold these via computer. But how might this change your job? I mean, you're down there talking to people, Dregs, and there's been so many complaints, or maybe not complaints, but it's been brought up many times over the last year and a half, the idea that you can't access people, and as a result, maybe the information train has been stalled a little bit the last year and a half.
Yeah, it has been, and to be determined as to how we manage through, you know, the next couple of days here in Florida. I know that there are only two scheduled media availabilities, and that's Thursday after the meetings, and that's Friday after the meetings. Individually, we all have to be tested, just one test. It's a PCR test, so it's not that big of a deal, and it's on site here. But I don't think there's going to be as much lobby trolling and lobby bar participation as we've seen in past years with either the board meeting, the board less so, right? Because you're talking about governors, you're talking about owners for the most part. Many of these men bring their wives, although probably not on this one because of the COVID restrictions. But, you know, given how the NHL has clamped down on our availability and what we have access to here in Florida, I don't know. Might spend some time at the pool tomorrow morning. We'll see how it goes.
Darren, Carlo continues to bitch on Twitter just about the NHL being one of the best. Like, I sometimes scroll through and I ignore. But sometimes when someone does it enough, you kind of, it gets your attention. You're like, maybe he's got something. And it's just the idea of the best hockey league in the world grabbing beer league goaltenders and not being able to dress a certain amount of forwards. Yeah. And it's just got an absolute East Coast League vibe to it, or just a garbage look to it. Is this going to ever be addressed and there come to a solution on this? Like, immediately?
I mean, well, you would think so. I mean, look, you know, we're not the first to talk about it. Do you think that the NHL clubs are happy about having to spring an e-bug into action, even for a morning skate or a practice or any of that? And maybe the National Hockey League was too aggressive in trying to leap back into what is normal. An 82-game regular season schedule, the taxi squad no more, all of those things. Like, it would have made a lot of sense to be able to create maybe an exemption in the collective bargaining agreement. And maybe you have to put a monetary cap on it too, right? Which is hard to do, because anytime you do that, you're talking about a CBA item and you're talking about a negotiation with the Players Association. But it would be better, wouldn't it, to have at least somebody with a limited amount of pro experience, as opposed to to your point, a beer league guy. I mean, right. it's a fun story, but I think we've all had enough of it. It's fun for the guy who gets to step onto the ice and do his twirl for 10 minutes and warm up and never be seen again, but it also makes a bit of a mockery of the position and of the sport. I mean, we've seen it one time not that long ago where a guy had to step into action, obviously, and did pretty well at the expense of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But that was a cool story. If you see it again, it's not so cool anymore.
With Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, Dregs down in Florida at the NHL Board of Governor meetings. How many chats do you expect to be having from the board, from the media members down there about the Olympic Games and participation at the Olympics?
Yeah, a lot, Brian. I mean, that's got to be one of the primary items. And the obvious one is involving everything that went on with the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2010. I mean, there's going to be some type of report. As Pierre LeBrun reported on Insider Trading, you know, I think we'd all be surprised if there isn't some direction that comes out of that from these board meetings. But absolutely, I mean, the Olympics and participation is a key topic. I haven't had an opportunity to pull the collection of owners or governors. I have a handful of owners who want nothing to do with the Olympics. You know, there's just too much risk from a player perspective to send those players over there. I mean, you know, number one, you're looking at injury. Number two, what if one of those guys actually gets COVID in China and they're stuck there for 3 weeks? It's not like they're conditioning and they're skating and they're training and all of that. I mean, you want to get them back into North America as quickly as possible. So from an asset management perspective, the idea of shutting down the season and sending their star players over there does not sit well with a good number of the owners, not the majority. But guess what? The owners and the National Hockey League negotiated that agreement in the collective bargaining agreement of the Players Association. And unless there is a legit COVID-19 reason to bail between now and January 10th, they're committed to it. They're stuck with it. But I guarantee you it's going to be something we talk about for the next couple of days here.
Dregs, any, I guess we're kind of past that American Thanksgiving situation. Do you sense more trade chatter? Do you sense like a lot of things? I know we just talked about, you know, the cap being, teams being capped out and maybe underestimating an 82 games schedule and just jumping right back in it. But we're seeing so many teams not playing shorthanded, but really testing their depth. Has the trade chatter picked up at all?
No, I wouldn't say it's picked up, Noodles, but it's been consistent, right? You still have your teams that have wants and needs. You know, Chris Drury, the New York Rangers come to mind. They've been looking for kind of a middle forward for basically all season. Sammy Blais goes down, and they're looking to fill his vacancy. You know, you've got the Boston situation with Jake DeBrusk. Because of the Brad Marchand suspension, he was thrown into action, some of their injury situations. That has quieted a little bit, but I don't think that means that Jake DeBrusk is happy in Boston. So there's a situation we've got to monitor. The goaltending carousel is interesting, and Dallas has too many, right?
Yeah.
Anton Hudobin, his name has been out there for a while, but I think that Hudobin wants out sooner rather than later. He just doesn't see himself as a fit in Dallas anymore. There was some speculation connecting the Pittsburgh Penguins, but their goaltending is actually shaped up of late, so maybe there isn't a higher level of urgency from Ron Hextall's chair. But those are a few names, and you know, you've got Phil Kessel and guys like that. Chris Johnson rolled out that graphic earlier in the week. Still feels a little bit early because of the salary cap, but all it takes is one long-term injury, right? Or a team that is really looking at goaltending going, man, we can't afford it, but we're going to have to find a way. And maybe Hudobin, with a new, fresh opportunity, becomes that insurance that a team needs, especially if Dallas is willing to eat a little bit of money, right? Wow. If Dallas is willing to play the game, then I think he gets moved probably sooner than later.
I agree. I think Colorado might be, like, they've got to be looking at that situation and going,
have to be.
I mean, I like Darcy Kuemper as a goaltender, but you just showed it the other day. You come up with a upper body injury, you know, and a couple hours before a game, and against Johan, a team like Toronto. Johansson. Exactly, and Jerry Johansson's playing, and it's unfortunate because, you know, that's the truth of it is that team needs depth in that position. So I agree. Yeah. I think the goaltending carousel has to fire it up soon.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. You know, it's more interesting when we've got legit topics like that to sink our teeth into, right? Like, you can look at every team's roster and look at expiring contracts and, you know, injuries and all that and try and connect the dots. But until it actually starts happening, then you're just trying to connect the dots. And normally it is sparked by one. And I was a bit surprised that when Jack Eichel got traded to the Vegas Golden Knights, I actually thought that it wasn't going to open the floodgates, but I thought that we'd see a little bit more activity. And I mentioned Drury and the New York Rangers and the fact that they've been looking for a while now. That hasn't changed. So here's hoping, you know, we're approaching the roster freeze with the holidays around the corner. So it may not be an active December. I'm not saying that there can't be something, but there's so much off-ice stuff going on with guys getting fired left, right, and center, that maybe that's been a bit of a distraction for a lot of clubs. And maybe teams are also pulling back and going, okay, well, let's wait and find out who's actually managing in Vancouver before we start to kick at the carcass there, and some of the other situations. So all of that certainly factors into what can be a slow time of year.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, Carey Price video coming out of him in uniform with equipment, but basically just going out for a cruise, you know, skating around for 10 or 15 minutes. And it's just such a weird transition because of what he's been through personally, but also the injury, the surgery he's coming off of. It doesn't look as if he's even close, and it doesn't look like he's in a rush to return. What's your understanding of where he's at and what the Habs are planning to do with Carey Price?
Well, look, I mean, for public consumption, I don't think that there is a specific timeline here. There certainly wouldn't be a date on the calendar other than the Olympics looming and Doug Armstrong on line one calling on behalf of Team Canada to get a daily update on where Carey Price is. But, you know, Dom Ducharme in a media availability recently said, I think it was last week, that Carey isn't going to be back in any way, shape, or form before Christmas. And that's not that far away. But if you get, you know, past Christmas, now you're into the new year, It becomes more of an issue, less so for the Montreal Canadiens, more so for Team Canada. And I got to tell you guys, and you know, we've kind of nibbled at this layer of speculation because we look at Carey's contract and we look at the huge undertaking that Jeff Gorton has to embrace here with whenever he hires a new general manager and how they're going to rebuild the foundation of that team. I don't think that there's any doubt that the Montreal Canadiens are going to have to, you know, be in the business of looking at Carey Price as a tradable asset by March 21st, the trade deadline. It makes more sense that you'd wait until the off season, and maybe there's more flexibility from a cap perspective in the system to take on a mammoth contract like that. But we've talked about goaltending already. I'm sure there are managers around the game, especially those who think they're contenders, and maybe Sakic is among them, who are looking at Price's situation going, geez, I'd really like to get him back on the ice and see where he's at. Then I'd like to see him perform in the Olympics and see where he's at. And then when we get closer to March, you know, maybe realistically I can engage and I can move out some pieces to make a deal of that magnitude. For me, that's the bigger story because it's the picture of the future for Montreal and for Carey Price and for perhaps the team that swings hardest to try and land him.
Well, and you nailed it too on the sense that, like, the Canadians should have zero urgency getting him back. They're not in a playoff race. Right. They're not battling. You know, you're not 2 points out of a wild card spot.
It's a sense of putting them in noodles to take you out of that lottery.
Well,
screw
exactly.
It.
Like, you know what? It seems right now. I mean, Dvorak gets injured last night. Like, they're, you know, Petrie, they're fine with some of their long-term deals. And, you know, Josh Anderson, they're fine cycling young kids in, giving them experience. So what's there's no rush getting Carey Price into the lineup other than for the Olympics. That's
his
I'd
call,
write.
Though, right?
That's
where
his
it gets,
call.
That's
exactly.
Where it gets dicey, where Jeff Gorton, well, I don't even know if he knows Carey Price. And Gorton might
probably
be like,
not.
Yeah, listen, I'm liking what's happening here. If I'm Jeff Gordon, I'm actually stepping in at a beautiful time. We're terrible, we're losing, and I'm going to get a lottery pick here. But if you're Carey Price and you have ambitions of being in Beijing at the Olympics, you got to play. You got to play a certain amount of games. So,
and I think that's his priority, Brian. I mean, you know, every player is that way, right? Like he wants to get back into the game as soon as he can. And it's not just the Olympic motivation. You know, Carey is a good teammate, so he wants to do what he can do to help the Montreal Canadiens stay competitive. But you're right. I mean, if I'm Jeff Gordon, I want all of the assets that I think I might be able to peddle between now and March 21st to be out on that ice. Because I want who's ever interested to have a bigger picture view of what these players are capable. And you're looking at the mega contracts here. That's what you're looking at. And then secondarily, Dom Ducharme isn't going to have a choice in how he plays his young players. Aside from managing the bench to some degree, wouldn't you think the message from Gordon is, hey, I got to see these guys play. I got to see what we've got here in the future so that I know what pieces we have to build around. So, I'm probably saying that in a confrontational way, and I don't mean to. I mean, isn't that just common sense between coach and executive vice president / general manager for the moment of any organization? You got to know what you have before you can make it better.
That's right. Yeah, and I would expect that's the message and that's the plan the rest of the way. We'll see. Enjoy yourself down there, Dregs. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, live from the Board of Governor meetings down in Florida. So those are back. That's good to hear. Everyone getting back together down in FLA.
Nothing I don't understand that. It's just like, do it by Zoom. You really...
Oh, you can. I mean, I actually have to call a couple games in Florida next week, which would be...
I'm looking forward to getting back down there. I'm hoping to go down in February or March or...
You know what's unique for me is, you know, I'm going to be in Fort Lauderdale and then in Tampa, but like, you know, going to a place where it's kind of wide open or maybe the things have been relaxed, like I'm still going to be in Toronto mode, Ontario mode. Like you know, I don't think I'm going to relax it. Obviously, I've got to be as mindful as possible, right?
So let's just be honest, Noodles. Down there, there's no COVID in their minds. It's
exactly.
They live their life as if this thing is not existing. What's happening.
I have friends in Arizona who, exactly, like throughout all this time, have just never acknowledged it. But, you know, that being said, we were just talking about Carey Price going to the Olympics. Maybe I'm in the minority. I don't think they're going. I really don't. I don't think that they're going to the Olympics. You know, I just think that...
Every day that passes, I'm closer to your frame of mind.
You know, you're seeing, like, there's some political stuff going on. And
they're not
going. The governments are... Like, I think there might be too much downside than upside for them to go. Because if it takes one person that gets trapped there... You know, God forbid Austin Matthews test. How do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs would feel if Austin Matthews tests positive over there and he's got to be locked down for 2 weeks in China and the league resumes?
Oh, and it's a possibility. Like that's the risk you're taking if you're going over there. You know, the political stuff. I'm not sure. I don't think that factors in to the way the NHL is going to operate. I don't think they are. I mean, this whole diplomatic boycott. Meaningless. It's toothless. It doesn't do anything, and it doesn't change the games. The athletes are still going. The games are going to continue. So I'm not sure it factors into the way the NHL is thinking. But I'm with you though, Noodles. I do think you know COVID is lurking. It's here. They're testing and they're finding it. And it's I'd say it's 50-50. Where I thought it was close to 100% a month ago. You know, and every day that passes, I'm not quite certain that they're going to be at the Olympic Games. Yeah. It would be disappointing, but it would be understandable at the same time. Kurt Warner's got a movie coming out about his life, American Underdog. We caught up with Kurt earlier today. It was a joy. It was a pleasure. It's a great interview. It's fun topics about his career, his life, his journey, his involvement in the production of the movie. So we'll get to that more coming up with Kurt Warner. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away this week. Leafs taking on St. Louis Thursday, December 23rd. And every day this week, we will provide the clue to a current or former Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, the third clue of the week. This Maple Leaf scored over 700 career points in the National Hockey League. This Maple Leaf scored over 700 career points in the NHL. All right. I don't know if that helps us narrow it down or not, but pretty good clue. I think we're getting closer. A picture is being drawn here, and by Friday, we're going to know who that is. It's a great game to get, too, man, December 23rd. Anytime around the holidays, around Christmas, the building's buzzing. People are in a good mood.
Well, that's a 2 o'clock game, too. I was just looking at it because I think I'm calling a game that day, and I was looking at the start time, and that's at 7, but the Blues at Maple Leafs, from what I'm seeing on NHL.com, that's a 2 p.m. Eastern start.
Okay,
Noodles,
so
you're out of town. Hazy B, maybe a...
Alumni box situation.
Ooh. For some penne pesto.
The penne pesto. I can't tell you how often that pops
into
my head.
Dude, don't you dare disrespect the spring rolls that were in there, too, because you love those, too. There wasn't many left.
I couldn't get your hands on any.
those were my chocolate almonds. Those were my white whale. White whale chocolate almonds. That was me with the spring roll, man. I thought I had one. There was one left, and it went up in smoke. Disappeared.
Disappeared.
A one-timer. Happens. All right. Yeah. So we'll get to our final Lou Brown Award category, Lou Brown Awards After Dark, in about 15 minutes, and our look ahead for the week, courtesy of bookseats.com. But we caught up with Kurt Warner earlier today, myself and the O-Dog Noodles. You missed out on this, but this morning we were up bright and early, ready to catch up with Kurt Warner. It was a really fun interview about the movie coming out about his life. So let's fire this bad boy up. Here is Kurt Warner on Overdrive. This is really exciting for us. Kurt Warner is one of our favorite players of all time. He's a great analyst. We know him as a Pro Football Hall of Famer, 2-time MVP, Super Bowl champ. But all those are just details because now he's got a movie coming out on his life, American Underdog, in theaters everywhere on Christmas Day. Here is Kurt Warner. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm doing really, really well, guys. How are you?
Doing really well. I mean, you've obviously played in big games. You've been in Super Bowls before. How would you anticipate waiting for the release of this movie to waiting to play in a Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of similarities. As you get closer and closer to that date, you get a little more anxious, a little more excited, a little bit more nervous about everything. You know, the bottom line is just like when you're playing in a big game. You want to play well. You want to go out and do your thing and make sure that you put your best foot forward. And we want the movie to do the same thing. When it gets out there and people see it, we want it to connect with people. We want people to be thinking about the movie when they leave the theater. And so even though it's already done and it's not about performing in that moment, it's about performing in terms of giving the audience what they want or maybe even something that they don't expect going in so it can really grip their hearts.
Kurt, how much input did you have, the character that plays you, how things went down, actually happened? Like, you must have been there having a lot of input to make sure everything's the way to your liking, no?
Yeah, I mean, definitely had input. Everything from writing the script to, you know, being on set and doing some different things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what you have to realize in the process is that they're not making a documentary. They're making a movie. And that was one of the hardest things, I believe, for me and my wife to grab a hold of, because you go into it with this mindset of, okay, this is what we're going to show, and this is how it happened, and all of those different things. And as you go through it, and as the editing process goes, you know, takes place, and all of that happens, you start to realize, okay, this is just a snapshot of the entire story. We can't tell everything in 2 hours, so what is the movie we want to make? What is the direction that we want to go? And so we did. There was a very collaborative process between us, the actors, the producers, the directors. And so we did have a big say in a lot of things that went on. But there were also times that that they stood up and said, you know what, that won't work for this movie. And that scene can't make this movie because it doesn't play to the overall story that we're trying to tell. And so, you know, to answer your question, it was a little bit of both. I definitely had input in the movie. But there were also things that that those involved with the movie and understand that business had to take out or shape to make it the story that we ended up with in American Underdog.
Well, Zachary Levi will play yourself, Kurt Warner. At any point did you say, okay, here's a football.
Get Brad Pitt.
Get Brad Pitt or Zachary, you got to be able to throw this post or you got to take a hit. Like, you got to prove that you can be a quarterback.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I didn't have a say in who got to play the role. But obviously once they decided on Zachary, he came to the house very early on, and I did. I'm like, okay, now it's time to go out in the backyard and let's throw this football. Because what we know in making a football movie is you got to be able to pull off the football scenes. And again, I didn't expect him in a couple months to become a Hall of Fame quarterback and to be able to do everything like I did it. But yeah, he's got to be able to play the part to a point where it is believable. And again, not believable in terms of, oh, go out there and be Joe Montana or Kurt Warner or whatever. Just believable in the fact that, okay, you're back there and you're actually really throwing a football and you're really a part of what everybody's seeing on the screen. And so there was a lot of work, and Zach put in a lot of work because he wasn't a guy that grew up playing football. But, you know, when you see the movie, I think we really, really pulled off the football scenes really, really well, and it's going to only enhance what this movie is all about. So happy with where we ended up. But yes, that was definitely something that I was concerned about as we went into this process, is making sure that we do the football right. Otherwise, we won't be able to have the impact with the rest of the movie.
We're chatting with Kurt Warner, Pro Football Hall of Famer. A movie about his life is going to be released on Christmas Day. It's called American Underdog. And that title, it sounds almost like the title of a boxing movie, you know, of a fighter who had to overcome all these trials and tribulations. Is that how you would describe your journey, that it was a fight and ultimately it was triumphant in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think to a degree. I think, you know, as life is a fight for all of us to accomplish what we want to accomplish and get to where we want to go, that for most people, life isn't easy. Life, you know, leads us to our supermarket moment where, you know, we're working and we're wondering, why are we here and how did we get here? And maybe more importantly, how do I get out of here and go where I want to go? And so, that's a big part of the journey, is the battles that you face along the way to keep you going. And in this movie, you know, that title American Underdog, I think what's cool about it is that I kind of have a family of underdogs. My wife's got an incredible underdog story. I've got a son that was injured when he was 4 months old, suffered a traumatic brain injury, that's really been an underdog all his life, with people telling him what he can't do and what he's going to be as he moves forward. And so this movie is kind of a story that's woven together with all of our underdog stories. And that's what I believe is going to be so neat about when the audience sees it, is that you may not be able to relate to the dreamer that wants to, you know, go from a supermarket to the Super Bowl. But I do believe that you'll be able to connect with one of the characters and connect with the different storylines that are in there, and how together we were able to accomplish everything we were able to accomplish. And that, to me, is going to be the real heart and message of this movie. And so I'm excited, because you might go as a football fan, but I believe you'll be touched in a different way. And to me, that's what makes a great movie.
Well, when you got to St. Louis, based on this history, the supermarket, the grind, you really trying to keep the dream alive, and you became an official starter. You won the MVP when you were 28. How many of your coaches, teammates were aware of your backstory, and how many people, when you got there in camp, truly believed in your talents?
First of all, I don't know if very many people really knew my backstory. You know, a lot of times when people come to your organization and you're a player in that organization, you don't really hear about it until A, they tell you, which, where does that come up? Or B, kind of like my story, once I started to have success, obviously the story blew up, and that's where everybody came to really find out what my background was. But, you know, to your question, there was a great interview that we did about 4 weeks into the season, and it was myself and my cast of characters with The Greatest Show on Turf, and Marshall and Isaac and Tori and Oz and Ricky and all those receivers. And I remember the interviewer asking them, okay, did you guys all know that Kurt was, you know, was going to be this good when he got in that starting role? And I remember Marshall just kind of laughing and saying, you know what, we thought Kurt was awful, because all we heard in practice was him getting yelled at every day. Coach March was on him about something and telling him what he wasn't doing right. And so when he actually got put in, we were all thinking kind of like everybody else, like, oh my gosh, here we go. This guy's not any good. So didn't really know my backstory, didn't really know what I was as a football player. And I fully get it. I mean, I understand those kind of comments because how is anybody supposed to know? You know, I was just fortunate that I did get an opportunity to prove to everyone that I could play. You know, and I was fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of great players.
So obviously you made your impact in St. Louis, and that's, you know, you went on, you played in New York, played in Arizona, obviously had a lot of success in Arizona. But the fact that the Rams are no longer in St. Louis, how strange is that? That, you know, the movie's going to be set there, and you're a legend in a town where there isn't a pro football team anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing. You know, I go back to St. Louis a lot. The people, the community there were so incredible and so instrumental in my journey that it is hard. And you sometimes wonder how you fit in with the team in L.A. And, you know, I know there was a bunch of L.A. fans that felt that way when the team went to St. Louis, so I get that. But, you know, sometimes you just kind of wonder, you know, because your whole career and everything you accomplished was in a completely different city, even though same logo, same name, a completely different city. And so, you know, it's been an interesting thing. I think there's certain guys, Isaac Bruce, who actually played in L.A. Before, even though, you know, a big part of his career was in St. Louis. I think there's that connection there between the city of L.A. And the Rams are doing a great job of trying to connect all of us in that way and let them know, hey, this is still your team. You're still part of our family. But it is definitely a weird feeling because you're going to a stadium that you never played in. You know, when you talk about the team, you got to talk about them as the L.A. Rams, even though you still in your mind think of them as the St. Louis Rams. So it's definitely an interesting thing to be a part of a team, an organization, a fan base that kind of has that that interesting take of being played in two different cities while you've been around.
He is Kurt Warner, Pro Football Hall of Famer, two-time MVP, Super Bowl champ, and the movie about his life will be released on Christmas Day. It is called American Underdog. We look forward to seeing the success that comes with this, Kurt. Good luck with it all. Really appreciate you taking time for us. Thank you for doing this.
You got it. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
There he is, Kurt Warner from earlier this morning. A wardrobe change for the O-Dog. Myself, I'm ready to rock. This is how I was dressed this morning. We looked tired. We looked disheveled. But
you look like you crawled out of a peel at 4 a.m.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I was in a bad place. Speaking of 4 a.m., do you see this story out of Finland? The prime minister of Finland is a 36-year-old woman, youngest prime minister in the world. And she was spotted clubbing in Helsinki until 4 a.m. in the morning.
So what?
Well, here's why. I guess her foreign minister had tested positive for COVID. And because she was fully vaxxed, she was told by her people, like, don't worry about it. Don't quarantine. It's all good. Go about your life. And she left her work phone at home and hit the club scene. And while she was out, someone sent her, I guess her staff member sent her a note on the work phone saying, actually, on second thought, you should quarantine. And she was out clubbing until 4 in the morning. And I have an appreciation for it. It's great. You know, I think 36. I'm 38. I'm not going to a club until 4 a.m. And I'm not a world leader. Anyway, time now for the bookseats.com trip of the week with a couple of big football matchups. This one's an obvious one for me. If I'm jumping on bookseats.com and picking a trip, it's Bears-Packers Sunday night. Justin Fields is back. He's playing. He's going to play on Sunday night. So I would go with that game. But we just had Kurt Warner on. I guess he would think Rams at Cardinals. Those are his two teams. And that's the Monday nighter. Down in Arizona, bring your sticks with you. Go play a little golf.
Love
not doing that,
that
in Green Bay.
You're not doing anything in Green Bay. I'm going to tee it up before the football game.
Yeah, it'd be an epic trip.
It would be great.
Yeah.
For sure.
And bookseats.com would hook that up. You know, maybe
dude,
go
we got
to
get bookseats. One, dude, we got to do TPC Scottsdale while they're out there. Catch a Coyotes game. Do a couple shows. That's our bookseats trip.
Yes, I agree with you. Jump on Instagram at bookseats.com. So get to at bookseats.com on Instagram to enter the Las Vegas Sports Package giveaway. Bookseats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. We'll come back with our final Lou Brown Award. One more category. Lou Brown After Dark coming up, and we'll tee up the Raptors in Oklahoma City tonight right here on TSN Radio. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Lou Brown, we've been doing this for 2 years now, the Lou Brown Awards, our favorite character from Major League, the manager of the baseball team. And sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle, the GM of that team. Charlie Donovan is the GM, who actually recruited Lou Brown to be the manager and brought in all the pieces. So we can't forget about that. Let's go around the table here. The Charlie Donovan category, Executive of the Year for 2021. Who do you have, Oh?
Well, hang on a sec. Charlie didn't win Executive of the Year, did he?
Of course not. No. There were awards in the movie. It was we figured we'd add this
Look,
category.
We got it. I got to pick Ross Atkins. Did some positive stuff. Jays are back on track. Everybody was giving him the business. I think I took Dubas last year. I can't double down. And I can't keep going back to the same place.
Yeah?
I'm going with Ross Atkins.
Ross Atkins.
Yeah, I'm keeping it local.
Okay. Noodles?
Alex Anthopoulos had himself
Whoa,
a nice year.
Good one. Hey,
that's the answer right there.
Yeah.
I had the same guy.
Let's be honest. You know, he was awesome, right?
Yeah. Like,
and he's such a good guy, friend of the show, you know, I mean, you name it. Just everything about him I love, and I'm very happy for him, the success that he's had.
The trades he made at the deadline.
Yes,
this is the first overlapping category we've had where I'm on Alex Anthopoulos as well. We didn't know who we were picking before the show. We've had all original answers, but I'm on Anthopoulos as well. Trades he made, good Canadian boy, awesome friend of the show. We love having him on. So shout out to Alex Anthopoulos, who I believe is worthy, absolutely worthy, of the Charlie Donovan category of the Lou Brown Awards.
Maybe the Lou Browns part two near the end of the regular season.
Okay, we can probably circle back on that. I mean, everyone loves the Lou Brown Awards. There's nothing wrong with that. All right, Raptors are up next on TSN Radio. They're in action tonight. The Leafs are back in action tomorrow. Noodles, good to have you back, buddy. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. We're back tomorrow at...
Throw in the heater, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.